Well, Damon Allen became pro football's career passing leader while playing for the Toronto Argonauts. A few weeks ago, Damon Allen ended his football career after 23 seasons, having amassed 72,381 passing yards and another 11,914 along the ground. Here's a quote for you. Empirical evidence overwhelmingly confirms that Damon is the most prolific player in pro football history. This is from Pinball Clemens, folks. Michael Pinball Clemens, the Argonauts CEO. To run for almost 12,000 yards makes him one of the best rushers ever. To pass for a world record 72,381 yards makes him arguably the best passer ever. And to do both and win four championships makes him absolutely iconic. And he's joining us here in the studio today. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Damon Allen joins us. Really good to have you. Big long drive in, isn't it, eh? It's took you, what, 10 minutes to get here?
Yeah, about 10 minutes. It's nice to be in our home city, Oakville.
You do a lot of press these days after the retirement. It's kind of been a media circus, has it? Or
yes, actually, I would say 2 or 3 days after the press conference. I've done a lot of media stuff. But
has it slowed down a little?
It slowed down a little bit. I think I'm going to be more busier now than I was playing the game of football.
Why?
Well, I think, once you're retired and then you have all these companies that now you know that you're available. So there's golf tournaments, there's a variety of different things. And, I signed with the National Speaking Bureau, and so I'm looking to start doing those things and still involve myself with football, too.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled that you're here. I've always wanted to talk to the younger brother of the NFL Hall of Famer, Marcus. I'm so sorry to do that to you. Can you imagine that shadow following you around?
It started all the way since high school.
Since Pop Warner, maybe even?
Well, not necessarily Pop Warner, but the fact that we went to the same high school.
Okay.
And we both played quarterback, it really started then.
Unbelievable history.
Even though everyone knows him as a running back, but he started playing quarterback and defensive back in high school.
Is it true that as far as your rushing stats are concerned, you retired only 323 yards behind your brother, who was a rusher?
That is absolutely true, and I was also told that I would be in the top 15 rushers in the National Football League, too.
That's nuts.
Around there. So.
That is just insane. Desiree is also here joining us,
yes,
and it's
hello. Lovely
to have the husband-wife thing going on.
Thank you. It's nice to be included.
The first thing I asked Damon when I was talking to him on the phone, I said, are you as nuts as Shelley Austin? Like, are you just as wound up and just bonkers as Shelley?
I adore Shelley Austin, but no, she has energy like none other.
Her and I did the Glenn Allen show, The Edge on Good News Sports, and that was one of the most memorable episodes
I bet
they ever taped.
I bet.
Matter of fact,
anyone that knows Shelley will never forget her.
Oh, no. Yeah. It went back to the board, and they discussed whether they were actually going to air it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you must have been talking about it, everything.
We talked about everything.
Oh, yeah.
It was on sex.
Oh.
Man.
She doesn't hold back
much
opinion either.
She did not hold back at all.
No filters.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So her and I, can you imagine her and I doing a show together?
Oh, that's
funny.
Would
just be wrong. Three girls. Amanda.
Yes.
Alyssa.
That's right.
And I don't know how to pronounce the last
Atea.
One. Atea.
Atea, yes.
Where does, I've heard the other two, but I've never heard Atea. Is there like a background there?
No. We just got hooked on the letter A. Thought it made it easier. It narrowed down the names for kids.
Right.
And so we liked Taya Leone. We liked the name Taya. So we just put the A in front of it and came up with Atea.
Yeah. George Foreman told me that the reason that he named all of his kids George Jr., George Foreman Jr., was because the doctor said, one of these days you might have a hard time remembering their names.
That's right.
So this might be a good thing for you guys.
Oh, but we never call them by their names. We go through every name of the child before we get to the right name.
What is your name? Don't lie to me.
Right.
I know where you live.
You know who I'm talking to.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's an old Bill Cosby routine.
Yeah,
or something.
That's pretty common in our household.
Really?
Yeah.
Run through the names. Are you a grandpa?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
His name is Justice. He's 5 years old.
Because you're not a grandma, but he's a grandpa.
Yeah, I'm a nona.
She's a nona.
What does that mean?
A grandpa.
What's
that
a
means,
nona?
That means grandma in Italian.
Really?
I'm actually a papa.
Papa.
I'm called papa.
Papa. Okay, that'll work. Yeah. Are there any papas right now playing in the CFL?
I've never heard it.
Raymond likes to break records.
You just keeps rolling with that, man.
Oh, we've got another stat, though, too. You know, I don't know if you missed out or we were just going to talk about it later.
Yeah, that's not on your paper.
We've got a 19-month-old little boy.
I did not know that.
Yes. Yeah, Eris.
I'm going to fire my research assistant.
My first son.
Yes.
Congratulations. Look at them. You're both absolutely beaming. Like, seriously, look at them.
Oh, yeah.
Because he pushes through it.
Really?
Yeah,
he's busy.
45 years old in July.
Yes.
So what?
Feel great, too.
I'm surprised. Desiree. Yeah. You've been fooling me.
5 years from 50.
Does that freak you out, man?
Not really, because, you know, I don't really look at age. I just... You know, how I feel, and, you know, I think with my kids and everything, they keep me young, especially with my 19-month-old son.
And your 19-year-old wife.
I feel young, too.
45 years old. Sorry, can I mention it again? 45.
Yeah, they do it quite a bit when I was playing, too. So.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just Damon Allen played this and this. Always 45-year-old grandfather, father of four, league's most outstanding player. Always came with a full sentence.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't give you like a platinum walker or something when you show up and you.
We'll see.
You might have given someone some ideas.
It's not over yet.
San Diego's a beautiful spot, man. Growing up there must have just, I mean. You miss it? Do you go back very often?
Yeah, we go back and spend spring break a lot of times actually in San Diego. But, you know, I think once you have a greater appreciation for San Diego once you get away. And I've been, in Canada for about 20 years, so it's always nice to go back.
So you're really appreciating San Diego then?
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you live in cities like Edmonton and, you know, how cold it is and you experience the cold weather. San Diego looks pretty appealing to go back.
Yeah. I used to work at a place called Hume Lake Christian Camps up in the mountains just outside of Fresno in the Sierra Nevadas there, and up near Sequoias, the big Sequoias. Anyway, I remember when I was a young guy, back in those days, there was no seatbelt laws. Mm. And so we would ride in the back of pickup trucks. We went to a big retreat down near San Diego the whole way in the back of a pickup truck. Got burned to a crisp, let me tell you. But we had like hot dogs and just chips and pop and the coolers filled with just garbage food. And I'm surprised we didn't get arrested because we were throwing hot dog wieners at cars and bikers and things.
Those were the good old days.
Oh, those were the good old days. Yeah. It's my only.
You might get shot at when you throw a hot dog.
Oh yeah,
California.
Don't be doing that now, man. Pop a cap in you. Unbelievable. It's a park called Knott's Berry Farm. Is that down near
Anaheim?
That's in Anaheim.
Anaheim. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Where I went to school in Fullerton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got kicked out of Knott's Berry Farm Park.
Oh my goodness.
Throwing hot dogs?
No, it was during Christian music festival night.
Oh, those Christians are just so wild, I tell you.
I ended up, you know those, why am I talking about me? You know those, the games where you shoot the squirt gun into a target and the thing goes up, right?
Yeah.
Well, a buddy of mine decided it'd be funny to, as they say, go hit the lady that's running the game.
Oh.
Except I hit her dead in the eyeball with this power stream thing.
Oh, it comes out pretty strong.
Oh, she dropped. And we ran. And moving right along. Valencia Park Pop Warner Mighty Mites got to the championship game and choked. And then in junior peewee, you made it back to the big game and won. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think our first year playing football, I don't think we won the championship.
No. Obviously, it had a huge impact
then,
on you.
Yeah, ever since then.
You kept on winning after
I can say I won at every level of football.
Did you have a David Archuleta or Tiger Woods father that just drove you to it? Was up in your grill all the time?
No, I think we had to ask our dad to get involved. And then, you know, once he said okay, then he really left a lot to us, our desire to play and work at the game. But the thing that he was able to do is he became our coach, so he was involved quite a bit. And so, you know, if he's going to, be involved in his sons, he said he might as well be the head coach or coach, whether it's baseball or actually football. And, you know, the great thing is, you know, as a young kid is, you know, your father keeps all the equipment. And so, you know, it's constantly you can create games, whether you chalk the baseball field in our backyard or, you're watching an NFL game and you try to emulate what you just seen on Sunday if they were playing in the mud. And so we had our gear on the football on the football field. We had our gear, the baseball, and so we always out back in the backyard creating. And I think that's where we got our pretty much our passion from.
Was he a coach at Lincoln High?
He wasn't our coach at Lincoln, but throughout Pop Warner he was.
Pop Warner, okay.
Pop Warner and Little League.
Right. And then, of course, Cal State Fullerton comes along and you bust a whole bunch of records, including a 26-year-old NCAA record with only 3 interceptions and over 300 attempts.
Yeah, that was...
That's nuts.
Well, I think at that time, you know...
Especially
you,
that age.
You know, you always... You know, as a quarterback, you always learn that, you know, quarterback's got to protect the football. And so, you know, that was pretty much ingrained in my whole makeup about, you know, playing the position quarterback. You know, not throw a lot of interceptions... protect the football at all costs.
And yeah, but so. Come on. I mean, this modesty thing is driving me nuts here.
Really?
No.
Because I was always, you know, you read books on quarterbacks and you like many of the quarterbacks and they are always cool and calm when they play the game. But, you know, they play their own style of game. But, you know, there's certain things that you read about quarterbacks, the real good ones is, yeah. You know, in the huddle. You know, your presence in the huddle, you're cool, you're calm, and you know when you know if you look at the game today and you see quarterbacks that are you know going crazy in the huddle. I mean, it creates a whole different atmosphere in the huddle, and which doesn't allow the team to function at its best either. Because when you're at chaos, you better know the rest of the 11 are going to be in chaos.
Yeah. Yeah, you dictate the pulse. That's for sure. But apparently that wasn't enough for you to be Mr. Record Breaker Man in just one sport. You wanted the Bo Jackson style of life. Quite the pitcher, apparently. Detroit Tigers drafted you?
In 84.
In 84. Man, you're old.
Dating myself.
But you eventually signed with the Pirates, though.
Well, that was due to not actually going... signing a contract with a major league team, and it wasn't until 10 years later, after 10 years in the league, I decided I wanted to close that chapter. And so I had worked out, trained.
Like you went to their training camp.
I went to the training
and camp. Left.
Well, yeah, I mean, because
he says so.
I didn't realize how well the CFL was treating me at the time. It started costing me money to went down to spring training to play, and they didn't want to invest any money, and so I had eventually go back to football.
So
I had a family to raise.
So you realized that they were loving on you up here, and you went, okay, I'm going to go where the love is.
No, it was difficult to quit because, like I said, I've never quit anything in my life. But for me, the fact that, you know, I pitched well, but they weren't willing to invest any money. I was 30 years old. You know, I haven't pitched a baseball in 10 years, and, you know, I should go back a little bit. We're in Hamilton, and I was playing with the Hamilton Cardinals, working out with this team because I knew – they had a tryout in Pittsburgh. And so I knew about the tryout. I trained for it. And so when I got traded from Hamilton to Edmonton back in 93, we drove through Hamilton to stop off in Pittsburgh. I threw that day. They signed me that day, told me to get ready to go to spring training the following year. I played this season with Edmonton, won the Grey Cup, and went back to training again. I was training with Mike Johnson, who was already in the major leagues at the time. And then I went to spring training in 94, and that's when I, you know, it was around the same time Michael Jordan was in Sarasota, Florida, playing with the White Sox.
If Jesus is Lord of the losers, well, he was, right? Lord of the, like, the least of these, right? And you really, no one could ever really use that term with you. It seemed like you're one of those gold plate, silver spoon jerks that I used to hate growing up, because everything you touch turned to gold.
Well, that's kind of you. I wish I had some of that gold now.
Yeah,
I mean, with the gold prices they are now.
Yeah. So, how did you land into the Jesus stuff? Like, did you grow up in a God family? Because a lot of people buy into the Jesus thing when life sucks and they need a doctor, right? That's what Jesus said. I came for people who are sick and need of a doctor. I didn't come for all those that think they're all that in a bag of chips. That's a slight paraphrase, but.
But we're generational. I mean, from grandparents.
Oh, you got the Jesus thing all the way through.
Yeah, I mean.
So you're dead meat.
Yeah, we had no choice but to go to church. I mean, even.
That's when the whooping would come.
That's right. My father believed in spare the rod, spoil the child. I mean, that was something that you know, he believed in. And so, I mean, we're, you know, so he was a disciplinarian. But like I said, my mom, she sung in the church. Father was a pastor. And so when we were raised in San Diego, I mean, that was something that we did on Sunday was go to church. I mean, eventually it comes to your own decision.
Yeah, you got to own it yourself. Yeah,
that's right.
When did that happen?
I might have been around 10 years old.
Wow.
That I was baptized. I mean, I was singing in choir, doing all the church plays.
I cannot imagine you in a church play.
You know, Sunday speeches and all those things.
Wait, hold on. Did we just find out something that you suck at? You can't sing?
He's not the singer in the family, no.
I'm writing that down.
I can blow in the shower. In the shower, everybody can sing in the shower.
Yeah. What about you, Desiree, with the God stuff? Did you grow up with the bloodline of Jesus?
Same, yeah, same. My route was a little bit different. I attribute it to the Lord taking me out of my birth mother's womb and placing me in the arms of another woman that
you're adopted
to Jesus. Yes.
I was adopted.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool.
Did you meet your birth mom?
I have.
Me too.
Yes.
Was that weird?
It's been good. My birth mom and my birth father. But, you know, when I met them and I realized that they, you know, while my birth mother and family weren't believers, I knew exactly why I had been adopted. And I praised God for that. Yeah.
Are you still in touch with the birth parents?
Oh, and all my siblings.
Yeah, she was a single child.
Yeah, I grew up as an only child. My adoptive family, I was raised as an only child, and when I found all my my birth people, I've got like five siblings.
Yeah.
So you went from princess syndrome.
That's right.
Yeah, to army. Yeah. Army of brothers, sisters, cousins, relatives.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
When you guys met, did you meet through God stuff? Because you're. Like, was it like, you know, looked across the room in the Sunday school class and fell in love with
each
other? Almost. It's not.
It was.
I seen her in church. It was actually my aunt. I was at Cal State Fullerton, and I was living with my aunt, and she was living in Whittier
Whittier, yeah.
And I used to commute, so she invited me to come to her church.
I was a member.
Yeah.
Aunt was an usher at the church where I was a member.
La Puente.
Did she know you?
No.
Yeah. She'd know me personally,
no.
But we knew each other.
Words,
we were both members of the same church.
Was it a setup?
No,
okay.
Not at all. And the reason that I think we saw each other because we were in kind of a big church, but you know, being Marcus's brother, he was a celebrity in the audience. So my pastor said, "We have someone important in our audience today." And so, you know, he introduced him and Damon stood up, and so yeah, that's how I saw Damon. I don't know how he saw me, but
I've used this comment too many times in my career, and I'm just going to overkill it, I know, but it fits at this particular moment. You're the Ken and Barbie of the CFL.
Oh.
What?
Never heard that before.
Me either.
You're just good-looking people.
Oh, that's very kind.
I hope one of your children is ugly, just so you can empathize with the rest of us. Seriously.
Not in our eyes.
Yeah, not in our eyes.
Man. All right, so the proposal. We got to talk about the proposal.
Oh.
You want to
do that one, honey, or do you want me to?
Well, you know, you talked about earlier how, you know, when you know the Lord or the people that, you know the Lord for a long time, everything's been good for them or it hasn't been good for them. Well, there's always, you know, bumps in the road. So even though we, you know, grew up in the church and were raised in the church, we strayed away. And so, Damon and I had a baby out of wedlock quite early in our relationship.
Okay.
And he went off to Edmonton, and he was there for the first season. Yeah. Then he came home and decided that he wanted to have his family with him. That was myself and our daughter at the time.
Yeah.
And we were there in Edmonton for a little while, and he was used to kind of, you know, doing things his way. And I was hoping that us being there with him would mean the next step was marriage. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't quite ready for that, so I decided that I would move back to California and get back with life, you know. And the next season he got hurt, and he realized that life, you know, was different without somebody
with
you.
Yeah, I needed my family with me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So he came home and surprised me and proposed to me in one evening when I got home from work.
Let's hear a little more about the evening.
Oh, Well, no, it was kind of funny. Yeah,
tell me you didn't do the whole go out for dinner and then say you wanna.
Because he was in Edmonton, so he wasn't expected in California.
Okay.
And it just so happened though that his agent called me and asked to speak to him. And I was like, no, he's not here. You know, he's still in Edmonton. So that kind of piqued my curiosity a little bit. But I went on about my day. I didn't expect him. You know, he hadn't said he was coming to town. And so I went on to work, and I worked a late shift and didn't get off till about 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And when I got there, were you there when I got there? I don't remember that detail.
I was in the house.
But, yeah, so then he got on his knee, and I was very surprised to see him. He got on his knee, and he proposed. And he, you know, told me that he had a hard time the last season without me, and he wanted us to be together.
Did you tear? A little tear?
Huh? Sure I did. Yeah? It was something that I had been waiting for, and I had hoped that, you know, would... you know, when we were living in Edmonton together for that short stint, I was just praying, Lord, you know, things just didn't feel right. And I just prayed that the Lord would really bring our family together. So it was a real answer to prayer when he proposed that we would make things right and be a real family unit.
Yeah, we were living, like I said, we weren't married, but we were living together. And
sure.
So she always felt that, right? And so I think that's what spurred her. I said, you know, this is not right. So she went home, and so.
Well, I'll tell you what got it. We were a member of this church, members of this church in Edmonton, and we weren't members yet. He had been going, had been attending the year that I wasn't there, and I went, and a few times, and finally the pastor came up to Damon and said, "Damon, you've never introduced me to your wife."
Oh.
And Damon didn't correct him. He didn't say, "Oh yeah, this is my wife," but he just said, "You know, this is Desiree." And so then that afternoon we had this conversation that if you were ashamed to tell this pastor that I wasn't your wife, then
what's going on?
Yeah, well, yeah. What do you think about the way Jesus feels about it, you know? So I realized too, I wasn't the only one that was uncomfortable with the living situation. So yeah. And that was what was so wonderful about the fact that we both had Christian backgrounds. I mean, that was certainly something that brought us together. Our first date, we had enjoyed the fact that we knew the Christian radio station and listened to it often. And, you know, we had a lot of things in common. The church that I belonged to, obviously, we had said earlier, was his aunt's church. But they were also sister churches to the church that he grew up in San Diego, which was a two-hour distance apart. So we had a lot of similarities that way.
But it all comes back to the injury. Mm-hmm. The injury. It was the injury.
You know, I think it comes back to, you know, we both knowing, you know, the Lord. And even in the midst of, you know, the challenges we were having and living together and not wedded, you know, we managed to stay together. I mean, like I said, even having a child out of, you know, wedlock.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was just a sophomore, junior in college.
Yeah, we were young.
Yeah.
We were young. You know, the injury probably was the wake-up call.
Yeah,
you know, it was the wake-up call.
Well, injuries can do that.
Yeah,
kind of like the left tibia or the broken middle finger in the right hand or the tendons in your toe.
That's right. Thank God they're all healed now.
My goodness, the game of football has given me every emotion a person can feel. That's a quote from you.
Mm-hmm.
When were you the angriest?
Mm-hmm. Oh, just when we lose sometimes, or I'm angry the way I played in the game. You know, there's disappointments, there's challenges, all those things that you feel as a person the game can give you. But, you know, that's made me who I am today, because through those challenges I've been able to, you know, be in situations that I've learned from and play the game.
But do you remember one specific moment where you were going to absolutely blow your stack?
Yes, I do.
Would you like to share that moment with us?
I would share it. We had just won the Grey Cup in 93. Our team, we had a very good football team, and we're playing the BC Lions in 1994. And we're actually in the Western semifinals, and we're marching down the field. And I wanted to, basically put it away. You know, we score a touchdown, then the game is pretty much over. And I end up throwing an interception.
Jerk.
And and you know, the things that what happened is sometimes when it's a play that's, for example, it's a slant and an out route on both sides of the field. And so what happens is if you look to one side, it's too late to go back to the other side. And so in that particular time, I did look to one side and I didn't throw it. And I went back and tried to throw it to the other side. And by the time, you know, the guy's open, but I don't see the DB actually coming over the top. And so when I threw it in the flat, he picked it off, went down for about 35 yards.
Who's the DB? Do you remember?
Charlie Gordon. Charlie Gordon played for the BC Lions at the time. He wore number 26. I do remember the 94. They marched down the field, and they eventually kicked the field goal, and they beat us. And BC Lions ended up winning the Grey Cup in 94. But I was angry then because that was my last time playing, too.
Unbeknownst to you, I actually happen to have Charlie Gordon on the phone just for you to heal up a little relationship.
No,
let me hear this.
I know you can't
find Charlie Gordon.
His mama can't even find him, huh?
When were you just flat out giddy, the happiest, the most stoked?
It's always during the playoffs, and you're going through that. It's like a runaway train when your team is playing so well.
Yeah.
You have a great smile on your face. You know, you're not talking about winning. When things are going really well for teams, especially in the playoffs, and they're going through the first round, second round, on to the Grey Cup, you know, those teams, they don't think about winning or losing. You know, they think about how many points they're going to score. There's been a few times in my career that we felt like that. And
I'm not sure whether you were at the helm during this particular Grey Cup final. It was, I can't even remember where it was. It was outside game. It was snowing like the Dickens. And they introduced the home team, and they come out one at a time. Okay, great, no problem. And then they started introducing the Argos, and nobody came out. And they introduced the next one. No one came out. Introduced the next one. No one came out. And all of a sudden, you guys walked out. I don't know whether you were there, but they walked out as a team holding their helmets in the air. It was a Hollywood script deal, and I was so
pumped. Was it Grey Cup?
Yeah.
It might have been the 96-97 Grey Cup is in Hamilton.
Because there was no doubt.
Argos versus the Eskimos.
There was no doubt the Argos were going to smoke them, and it was just like.
Well, it was a thriller now.
That's exciting.
It was a great game.
Goosebumps thinking about that stuff, man.
Yeah, and so I think those times are your most happiest because you know that your team is functioning with one mindset, one heartbeat, and the direction of your team is going to where everybody wants to go. And I think that's when you have a great smile on your face. You know you can see it, you can feel it, you can touch it. And then when you just play the game and you dreamed about it already, when you play the game, it's just like, I've been here before. And so it's always those times, and I've had quite a few.
Is there a chance that you will come out of retirement as many times as Hank Olesik?
No. How many times did Hank come out?
Oh, my goodness.
I know we brought him back a few times when I was playing.
Hank and I, he was kind enough to put up with this little jerk wannabe punter. Yours truly, and he and I went out and kicked a few times together. He was really great to me. He was fantastic.
To know the story of Hank. I mean, he was kicking when he was in high school with the Eskimos. So, that's unique in itself. And you always hear stories about Hank that he needed a parent permission slip to go on road trips during that time. And that was during the heydays when they were winning those Grey Cups too. So,
I've given football my mind, body, and soul. Is there a danger in giving so much that you end up losing sight of important stuff in your life?
I don't think I have, but like I said, it's my true passion and commitment to the game of what I do. Especially when you believe that God has blessed you to do this sport or to play this sport. And, with it, so often, people say, well, how did you play 23 years? I said, if I didn't have Christ in my life, my carnal mind, I just wanted to play 10 years, and I thought that would be a good career. And so when somebody says you play 23, there's 13 more years added to that. I always tell people I don't know how I couldn't have done it because my mind wasn't set on doing those many years. I just thought 10 years would be great. But it just shows to me that the Lord's covering.
But you never got arrogant? You never got up yourself? Where all of a sudden you kind of went, you know what? My priorities are out of whack. I've been not spending as much time with my kids and my wife, and it's all about me. And I'm Damon Allen. Hello.
There are times, and those are the challenging times. I have to really think, how much time I spend with my kids, because my wife knows that I can really focus in on what I'm doing, and almost forget sometimes that you're still, a husband. A brother, a father, and all those things. And so, I have to keep it in perspective.
Hmm. Weird for males because we're so singularly focused, driven, boom, there it is. But to then get the wake-up call every once in a while that, yeah, I've got a multifaceted or a multi-level, multi-layered life. And
that's
I
right.
need to be, you know, given more in more directions rather
but
than...
But she'll remind me.
I can imagine.
That's for sure.
I thought that was my job.
Oh, yeah.
She reminds me quite often.
When I decided to stop trying to make the show because I sucked, I found myself watching games and saying to myself, man, I could kick this guy under the table. You know, these 27-yard dribblers, right? I was a punter. Well, I want to be punter. How weird do you think it's going to be for you this year?
I don't think it's going to be that. It's not that bad. I'm telling you, thus far, it hasn't been bad. The other day.
Now, hold on. Desiree just went,
No, because I believe it's going to be tougher on them.
Why? Because you're around too much? Like, please go away, Daddy?
No,
or?
Because.
Football's been life for us, too.
They've been life for for our kids, too.
Yeah.
Ever since they were 1 year old, they've always went to the games.
Well,
we never left our kids at home.
Like that press conference, my oldest daughter that we had, you know, when he was in university, she bawled the whole time. I mean, that was just a chapter of her life that she was having to say goodbye to. Yeah, it's gonna be hard for all of us.
And what I was saying the other day, I just dropped my daughter off from her soccer game, and so I was listening to the radio. I was trying to find the Argos and Montreal game. And so I came across this game, but I didn't know what game it was. They were just talking football. I just knew it was watching the game. And I think the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and Hamilton Tiger Cats were playing. I said, well, and Hamilton was playing at home. So I dropped my daughter off, went down and seen the second half. And it was just, you know, I just look at the game totally different. And like I said, now in an enjoyable way as a fan, someone who still loves football, but I can look at the game differently and not feel I have to be out there.
You know, I think that's God too. I think that the Lord allowed him to be weaned. I mean, it's still a blessing not to have had some career-ending injury, you know, and be carted off the field, never to see the field again. He was weaned. It was difficult at the time, but you know, just certain situations started to happen that, you know, kind of take a little bit of the taste out of your mouth for that part of the game. You know, if it was just pure playing, you know, then that would be okay. But when other things start to come into play, whatever they may be, then that takes a little bit of the fun out of it. And so for us as well, like, you know, so I think that him not playing last season.
It wasn't fun sitting watching.
No, for him not playing last season, I think that was a weaning process for him.
And, the game for me has always been about participation. Hmm. I mean, that's what kids, I mean, when you play a sport, I think it's about participating. And when kids can participate, then, you know, they can bring their own style and how they play the game and enjoyment. But, you know, for me, that's I try to keep it that simple. If I can't participate, it's not fun for me.
No. Damon, 13 years ago, let's say your femur snapped and you were done, or, I don't know, your ACLU. Yeah, that's not really what it's called, is it?
ACL.
Thank you. ACL. Not sure where that came from. Anyway, what would you do? What would you have gone into? What would you have done? Because now you're like Mr. Management Guy. You know, you bleed the CFL now.
That's right.
You're stuck with it.
What have I done? I still would have been some part of the game would have still been in me. Whether it's been on the coaching side, I might have went in the coaching side much earlier than where I am today. Hmm. Where I am today, I mean, coaching's not where I want to be. Because I understand I needed to see it 13 more years to really understand. It takes a lot of time, especially if you're an assistant coach. You spend a lot of time in the office preparing for the following week, and much more time than probably the head coach would spend.
Yeah. Edmonton, then Ottawa, then Hamilton, then Edmonton, then Memphis Mad Dogs, then BC, then Toronto. Memphis Mad Dogs. Was that what kind of experience was that?
I thought it was a great experience. The most difficult thing was the fact that Memphis was granted their team, I believe, like 6 months before the season had to start. And so we couldn't really sell the game like it should have been. The field was a big difference down there in the States. There's not a CFL. There's not a field that actually.
So it was a tight field.
Yeah. It wasn't a field that can accommodate a CFL.
No.
The true essence of the game. And then scheduling. You know, we're down there in the SEC. You know, Alabama plays Memphis State, and so scheduling was very difficult. I mean, I think we had a game on a Saturday, and it was Friday night. The night before, they had the Black College game, and they had 60,000 in Liberty Bowl, and then we played the next day. I think we had 5,000.
You could hear a pin drop. Yeah.
So it, I mean, so scheduling was huge, but I thought deep down if the CFL would have done what other leagues do, you know, they grant the team, then they come in the following year, that gives them a whole year to really sell the game, then I think those teams in the States would survive, because you have to understand, all the teams in the States had great ownership. You know, our owner at Memphis Mad Dog was FedEx. Fred Smith was our owner. You know, and at that time, he was running a $8 billion company. So he wasn't hurting for funds. So...
We're in the studio with Damon Allen and Desiree, his lovely wife, and my son is in the corner.
Not saying anything.
Not saying anything.
Yeah. Taking it all in. Well, you're writing a book over here.
People have called you, Damon, the greatest all-around player in the CFL. Did you ever have to kind of process being ticked off that the NFL didn't give you a shot back in 85?
I don't know if I was ever ticked off, but I think it goes back to myself. I wasn't going down to the National Football League unless I had a really good shot at playing, participating. Like I said, it goes back to me participating.
Yeah.
And I'm the one that do not want to sign with the NFL team, hold a clipboard for 5 years, and say you played, right? And so in reality, I felt like I was playing 16 years because my brother played. And so I felt every emotion and everything that he felt playing in that league. And so for me, it's like I said, it gets back that simple. It's about playing the game that you love as a child or a young kid. And so I've been able to do that in the Canadian Football League.
Was there really an issue or a controversy about black quarterbacks back then?
No, I think
because some have said that. Some have said,
Well, it wasn't many. I mean, compared to it is now.
No, like they were trying to convert you to running backs and corners and safeties.
Yes, they
and
were.
Stuff.
Yes, they were. When I first came out of Cal State Fullerton, I was asked if I could play defensive back, receiver, in those positions, and not necessarily quarterback.
Like back in Pop Warner.
Well, not in back.
You played defense in Pop Warner, did you not?
My first year.
First year.
My first year.
Thank you very much.
That's right. You're smart. And not saying I wasn't athletic enough to do it, but I also knew that there's guys who play defensive back their whole career and don't make it.
Yeah.
And so for me, quarterback was the position that I knew. I understood. I knew I could play, but I also knew that many of the black quarterbacks who want to play quarterback, they all go to the Canadian Football League.
Chuck Ealy. I mean, there's a guy who had to put up with the black racist nonsense.
Well, he was in it. I mean, Chuck is much older than me, and so
much older than you.
Hope he's not listening.
He will listen.
Well, he's not much.
He might be listening right now.
Well, I didn't know that.
No, you already said it.
No, I said I watched you play in 72. I watched you play in the 72.
Wait, that?
Sorry, Chuck. I love Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
Chuck will forgive me.
What was that movie you and I loved? Oh, Remember the Titans. I mean, Chuck went through that.
Oh, that's the best movie. I just watched it again the other night.
Did you?
Like the first time ever.
That's one of my favorite football movies.
Oh, it's the best.
Man, fire me up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he talks about history and all those things, and history is always big for me. And, you know, that was the one thing I always tried to do when I came to the Canadian Football League, is to understand, you know, some of the great players that played before me, so I could get a greater appreciation for the game and, how difficult it is and how hard you have to work and those things. And so it's just too bad. Like, we're in a generation now that, you know, George Reed can come in our locker room and most of the guys won't know who he is.
How did you process retirement day?
I woke up that morning, and, you know, my wife, man, she's special. She made me breakfast.
Oh.
I ate breakfast. And to me, I told her, I said, it felt like it's game day because it's something I'm anticipating. And I couldn't eat. And normally, like when we're about to play a game, I don't eat as well.
Yeah, your stomach's tight.
I don't eat a lot. Yeah. And so... But that's what it felt like. You know, I can barely eat because I was anticipating something at 2 o'clock, which is a press conference. And so
you handled that thing tremendously, man. It was felt, so good to see your personality.
It felt like it felt like game day. And so, like I said, I was excited at the same time, a little bit nervous.
Yeah. Desiree, what about you?
You know, I decided in order not to be a blubbering idiot up there on the podium with him, I just tried not to look at the monument of – you know, what he was going to say. It was just another press conference, which we have done, you know, time and time again, interviews or whatever. And just look at it like that. Not, you know, all these years, it's coming to an end. I just tried not to look at it like that. And then, you know, and I did really well. And so we started singing that stupid song.
Oh, there's only one Damon Allen.
Oh, yeah. Our youngest daughter wanted to sing it so bad. And Pinball was, you know, was just going to make sure she was able to sing it because she asked him. And so we all sang it. And it was, yeah, it was hard to get through.
That's classic.
Yeah.
I was chatting with Shelley and Kent. They were on the phone down in the United States. And, you know, they went through some tough stuff. With the shuffling around, but especially that last little deal where Pinball just was chewing on his lip, you know, having to let Kent know what was coming down the pipe. And that was a tough thing for them to process.
Yeah, it's a tough thing.
Yeah, it was really tough because, I mean, that was, you know, even I thought an Ed move was, you know, that was the wrong thing the Argos to do.
Yeah, but you listen to them now, and they're like, oh, God, totally planned it because we went to Saskatchewan and rah, 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 yeah, and now we're down in Ole Miss.
That's just the awesome thing about, you know,
that is
the Lord. I am telling you, because we went through it too, you know. We went through it too and from B.C. to here, and that was, you know, I wasn't sure what Dane was going to say about his toughest moment, but that was certainly my toughest moment in, you know, as being a part of a wife of this CFL player, was leaving B.C. because, you know, when we got married, we were still quite young, and we've lived in Canada pretty much, you know, well, more so, more of our lives
here
than in California.
Yeah.
And so BC had become home. That was the longest stint that we had in one city. And, you know, we had a child there. We had a grandchild there. And I had an identity outside of football. I had friends and a job and a church home that I was, you know, a big part of. And so that was a really tough move. And I had a hard time for the first, you know, I want to say few months, but it probably, you know, was a good year before I started to just, you know, try to let go of it so I could see what the Lord had in store for the future. So I knew what, you know, I knew what Shelley was going through, and I tried to help her, you know, with just some of the things that I had dealt with, and, you know, for us not to get bitter over it because, you know, you might miss out on something good that's coming around.
Yeah, you don't want to be sitting around as, you know, nice Jesus people being all bitter.
No, that's right. Plus, it makes you age.
Oh, I've heard that.
You get wrinkles and all.
Yeah, you don't want to be bitter with Buono or the Golden Boy Dickinson.
That's
or anything
right.
Like that, yeah.
That's right.
All right, let's finish off with, who's that, Landsberg? Let's finish off with some of those kind of quick little snippet questions here, okay? I'll try not to be as twitchy as he is. Proudest moment.
Great Cups, 204 Great Cup was one of my proudest.
Embarrassing moment.
Ooh.
Oh, okay, let's go to your wife on that one.
That was the, he might have to tell you the year, but that fumble in the final in BC.
That was embarrassing?
I don't know.
Very embarrassing for me.
I felt bad about that one.
You never ran into a cheerleader and broke her nose or?
No.
Embarrassing moments, a few times that occur when you're a quarterback and you line up over the guard instead of
the
center.
I hate when that happens.
You know, those things occur.
Yeah.
That's not embarrassing.
Oops. Toughest linebacker. Like LT steaming at you.
Oh, the toughest linebacker. I would say...
you could hear him breathing.
Calgary, I was just talking about him. I'm trying to think.
Okay, we'll come back to that one then, Grandpa. guy that made you laugh the most.
John Avery.
Guy that ticked you off the most. And you've forgiven him now because you're a nice Jesus guy.
He's another linebacker. James West.
What, that's the first guy? The toughest linebacker?
The one that
got
hit me quite a bit, yeah. Because he used to hit me so good, man. I didn't know how he was able to do it, leave his feet. His timing was so impeccable. Because I didn't never get hit like that.
Kinetic pop.
Yeah, he knows how to do it. Yeah. James West knew how to do it.
We love him. We're very good.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Isn't that
but
special?
I got him in open field a few times, too.
Good for you. Guy with the stinkiest equipment.
Oh, who was that one sweaty guy that we'd have to go... This one center he had that he'd have to, like, go rub his hands on a towel before he'd get the ball.
Oh, that's just wrong. I don't even want to know. No.
Jamie Terrace. Jamie Terrace, sweat box. He needs to change his pants.
Yeah. Halftime. You have to change his pants.
Say no to crack.
Hey, it's all coming to me now.
What?
Toughest linebacker.
Toughest linebacker.
One of the toughest linebackers I've played. Alondra Johnson.
Oh, yeah. I could have told you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he ran 4-5, and you know, like I said, and when he's chasing from sideline to sideline, I don't think there was another better linebacker than Alondra Johnson because he was fast.
Biggest yapper.
Oh, it has to be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers front four, starting with James West, Delbert Fowler, Ty Jones,
who we lost,
who just lost recently, passed away. But they yapped the most. And I was a rookie, and so when I first was hearing all this on the football field, it was unreal. Who are these guys? But I did run for 3 touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Scared.
Yeah. I was scared to death. I was running out of, you know. I was only 150-some pounds, too. So.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Hardest city to leave? BC? Well, thank
you.
Yeah.
BC.
Yeah. Hardest person to say goodbye to?
Hardest person?
Yeah.
We don't really have to say goodbye too often, though, because even though we're leaving their city or we're leaving their team.
Still in touch.
We stay in
touch. Yeah, we keep in touch with everyone. Yeah.
Any regrets, professionally, personally, either of you?
Only regrets is that you should have won more Grey Cups.
Oh, man.
I'm serious. I mean, everybody asks me, what's my regret? I wish we should have won more Grey Cups.
Desiree?
No regrets. No. You know, we may have made some tough decisions sometimes, but I just don't have any regrets. I just figure
So you guys are really that nice
no,
people?
No, you pray about something. You do the best that you can at the time, and whatever you came out with was the way it was supposed to be.
You know, the last time I tried to dig dirt on someone and there was nothing was pinball. I tried to get something nasty on him. Couldn't come up with anything.
No, he's a saint.
Same with you guys. No. Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, when you look back at, we got to finish here because we got to move on to bigger people than you.
Oh.
We'll
be back next week.
Yeah, okay. When you look back over the whole thing, the whole career, where was God in it?
Front and center.
It's always been there because I understand the platform I was given, especially like I said when you stay in tune with. You know, he's put you in those positions to play. He's covered me to be able to play so long. And so I think, you know, and he's gifted you to play those things. Then it's so much easier to, you know, to lay all your burdens on him. And all I have to do is just play.
It's an encouraging story to hear. It really is. Marriage, career, you know, even from that rocky start thing. I mean, my wife and I can dig that. Okay? And that's encouraging.
Yeah, there's
for the
challenges.
Rest of us out there.
I mean, we understand there's challenges, and you know, whether it's your marriage, or your workplace, or you know, our relationships, friends, everything. I mean, there's going to be challenges, but it's going to make you stronger. It's going to make you better, not bitter.
I would like to see a quarterback challenge between you and Chuck. I'd like to see something going down right now.
Oh,
you know?
He's supposed to be trying to get that going with his quarterback.
I want to see.
You know, I'm going to bring Chuck in his era with some other guys. Chuck played with Lancaster, so I'm going to try to bring some of those old guys.
Good
call
for
them
you.
Legends.
Good for you.
And let them go through an event.
I'll give Frank Gifford a call, Wills. Good, Frank
Gifford.
Folks, we have just been chatting with Damon Ealy and his lovely wife, Desiree.
Damon Ealy.
Yeah.
So are you going to add his yardage to mine? And then it could be some like 80, some 90,000.
You guys.
Since my name is Damon Ealy.
Well, that's his son's name, right? So, you know.
Oh.
I babysat Damon one time, taught him to drive. His parents weren't happy about that, let me tell you. All right, we're getting out of here. When we come back, we've got two comedians to jam into 30 minutes, so that'll be fun. It'll be good laughs, good times. We're going to talk about Father's Day stuff and, I don't know, lighten up a little bit, all right? We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.